listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Monday, January 22nd at 4:30 p.m. The meeting will be held online via a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify a meeting is being held.
Hey KBOO listeners, KBOO cut through the clouds during our end-of-year campaign thanks to support from listeners like you. When we meet our campaign goals, we can continue to bring you colorful, radiant rays of radio. Thank you, and keep tuning in for unique music, cutting-edge news, and transformative public affairs on the airwaves.
KBOO. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Wherever you're at on earth, this is your once monthly episode of Culture in Motion, the show brought to you by your hosts, Mike Crenshaw, and a wonderful cast of people from all over the country and sometimes all over the globe. We come to you 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. PST, on the third Wednesday of every month on KBOO.FM, KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM. Portland, Oregon is where we're based out of, but we're on the planet Earth. We are Earthlings. Tonight we have a special show. One of the things that happened in our particular corner of Earth is we had an ice storm. What that means is it's dangerous getting around. Point A to point B is treacherous, it's hazardous, it's not safe, and in some cases, it's harmful. So I'm not going to make it into the station tonight. I was going to have a live guest, but my program director, Ender, and Laura are going to help basically bring to you this remotely produced episode of Culture in Motion on Wednesday, January 17th. 2024, the first Culture in Motion of the year, the calendar year 2024. Remotely, I'm going to be sharing some words that are passionate, that are wise, that are deep, that are loving, that are encouraging and inspiring, as well as fiery and revolutionary. From none other than the mighty Dr. Cornel West. Now, that said, I want to let you guys know that being a community radio station, one of the policies that we have is we're not here to endorse any particular candidate in any electoral race. So I'm not endorsing the electoral bid for president by the Cornel West campaign 2024. But what I am doing is I'm providing a platform where I hope to encourage and elevate the discourse by sharing the words of Dr. Cornel West in the ways that only he can say and share with you, the public. And I also want you to know that Culture in Motion is doing our best to invite other candidates, the Biden campaign, Nikki Haley, even Donald Trump, because we believe that everybody needs to have equal and fair access so that we can share an equitable, I guess, series of perspectives. That said, there has not been any return correspondence from any of those other people. So what I'm sharing here is being shared in advance of an event, a public event, that's going to be happening from about 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Old Church, downtown Portland, Southwest Portland, on Sunday, January 21st, where Portugal the Man, DJ Anjali, Lakita Langford, Malcolm Shabazz Hoover from Black Futures Farm, Danica Brown, myself, Michael Crenshaw, you know, there's going to be a handful of us in the house, and Dr. Cornel West will be doing a live keynote that Sunday, January 21st, at the Old Church, downtown Portland, 5 to 8 p.m. And prior to that, Dr. Cornel West is making time to meet with numerous local community organizers, activists, and leaders to do a round table. So what I will say about that effort is the reason it's important to be involved for me as an artist, okay, as an activist, as an educator, as somebody that's engaged in the well-being of working people, poor people, people of color, marginalized people, oppressed people in my community, in my city, in my state, in this country, in this society, on the planet Earth, is in alignment with the message that we must take these times very seriously. Because what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank that's been going on for decades, funded genocide funded by the U.S., executed by Israel, is something that impacts everyone on Earth. And if the dots aren't connected between the ecological crisis, the social, political, economic crises that we face, and the solutions that must come from the people who are impacted, and the leadership that must come from the people who are the most impacted. If we're not able to connect the dots, then we're failing ourselves and each other. So I invite you to enjoy the show, listen to the show, become a member of KBOO, go to KBOO.fm, donate, become a member, volunteer, learn the craft. And thank you for tuning in to Culture in Motion. Peace.
Oh, what a blessing to be here. Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha, Nebraska. Oh, what an honor. What a privilege. What a blessing, what a joy, what a joy. Thank you so very much. I want to begin by saluting my dearly beloved Anahita Madhavi West. She's a poet as well, so her book Dusty Relics is already a classic in the eyes of Angela Davis and Wallace Oyinkin and Skip Gates, who wrote blurbs. But I want to thank you, the band. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your tremendous support. And thank you for trying to keep me sane, because that's a challenge. I've been a black man in America for a long time. And if I can just be in my right mind 5 days of the week, that tree shows I serve a mighty God. And have a wonderful, I give it up again for my beloved wife. Love you, dear brother. Love you, dear brother. Something is happening in Omaha. The moment we got off of the plane, we ran into one of the visionary and courageous co-campaign managers. We have a quartet. We are jazz-like. We got four campaign managers. And it was Brother Edwin who picked us up. Where's Brother Edwin? Here he is right here. There's Brother Edwin right there. Oh, yes, we were just in Brooklyn, but Operation Power, which is the most progressive, even revolutionary black organization in New York City that endorsed my candidacy with Charles Barron. Inez Barron, we were right there with his father, Edwin Sr. Then we ran into Brother Anthony. Now, Brother Anthony, you all know. You know, he's been the MC and the orchestrator and conductor of this particular gathering. But he is extraordinary, visionary, for real, brilliant. Give it up for Anthony Kareva. Roger's right. Oh, yes. I got a chance to meet Alex, his magnificent partner. That was the first event we went to. Well, I met my brother from Denmark and the other wonderful ones that were there. And then we got a third with our dear sister Madeline married. Where is Madeline? Where is Madeline? Oh, there she is in the back. There she is in the back. There she is. Give it up for Sister Madeline. She's the third one. Magnificent, marvelous. And then our fourth, ooh, Kiana, Sister Kiana Dent, she's magnificent. She's in Ohio right now. But all four with a high-quality core team that's cutting against the grain, and at the moment it looks like it's David versus Goliath. But I'm always in solidarity with the Davids of the world. Always. For the Goliaths always appear as if they're so mighty, as if time is not a taker, as if this moment is not contingent and flexible and fluid. You think you are in high places, but sooner or later, no lie can live forever. Truth crushed the earth shall rise again. So you can look down on poor and working people. You can try to act as if those precious brothers and sisters under mass incarceration in hoods, dealing with indecent housing and decrepit school systems, don't have access to quality health care, let alone quality free education, act as if they are afterthoughts. But sooner or later, somewhere I heard, born in Omaha, Nebraska, he said, chickens come home to roost. Oh, yes, that's Malcolm X. You reap what you sow. Sooner or later, you're going to have to come to terms with what you've been repressing, because no status quo can remain in place forever.
Right.
And let's be honest about this. Malcolm X was no ordinary human being, no ordinary black brother.
Right.
That's why North Omaha is no ordinary space. Oh yeah, let's be honest about it. Malcolm X was the freest black man of the 20th century because he had what it takes. He had the courage to raise his voice. He took seriously the anthem of a black people, which is not lift every echo, is lift every voice. And you can't raise your voice unless you come to terms with your own wounds and bruises and scars and transfigure them in such a way that what is distinctive in your voice is like your fingerprint, namely something that you have been called to say and to do. That's the Malcolm X that I'm talking about, from North Omaha, Nebraska, from Earl and Louise, Baptist minister, Garvey figure tied to the UNIA. Oh, yes. Yeah. Marcus Garvey would always have a highly sophisticated and dignified black man or woman carrying a sign at every rally. And what did that sign say? The black man or woman is not afraid. That's serious business. Is not afraid. Because Malcolm X, like so many of us who come from a great black people, a world historical people,
who have been hated chronically for 400 years and yet keep dishing out love warriors every generation. You can't be afraid to love truth. You can't be afraid to love beauty. You can't be afraid to love goodness. You can't be afraid, even if you're like myself, I'm still a Christian. I'm still a revolutionary figure coming out of the black church. You love your God in your right way, you won't be a coward. But Malcolm X understood what Mary Ellen Pleasant understood. She was the first black woman multi-billionaire in the history of America. She gave John Brown a vanilla brother who loved chocolate people. She gave John Brown $600,000 in 1857. The note was in his pocket when he was executed as a result of his activity at Harper's Ferry. And she, and Malcolm, and Marcus, and A. Philip Randolph, and Ella Baker, and Fannie Lou Hamer, they would always say, "I'd rather be a corpse than a coward. I'd rather be a corpse than a coward." Martin Luther King would add, "I'd rather be dead than afraid." So when you all get a chance to look at this, don't get it twisted. This is not about some sanitized, deodorized presidential candidacy that to be understood on mainstream television. This is about simply a particular moment in a movement, an instance in the struggles of a people. It is simply a small wave in a great ocean of a people who have always been willing to look directly, unflinchingly at hatred and still talk about love. Beginning with love of self. I am who I am because somebody loved me. Irene B. West, my mama, loved me. My father, Clifton L. West, loved me. Reverend Willie P. Cook of Shiloh Baptist Church. In those ways, we had pastors. Now we got too many CEOs, but we won't go into that right now. See, the blood was real blood at the cross, not that little Kool-Aid thin stuff you dip in order to become part and parcel of some market way of life. I'm talking about serious, deep love. And one of our problems these days, not just on the black sides of town, in the whole country, we got a younger generation hasn't been loved right. Hadn't been cared for right. Hadn't been attended to right. Hadn't been focused on. I'm the exact opposite. I'm a love child. And when you are a love child, it means, in fact, that you are not afraid. Or to put it in the language of a young brothers and sisters, that you've been de-niggerized. Because when you niggerize a great dignified African people, you try to teach them that they're less moral, less beautiful, less intelligent, and then keep them scared and intimidated and afraid all the time. So they laughing when it ain't funny and scratching when it don't itch and putting on the mask in order to somehow negotiate and navigate in a white mainstream so they can get white approval and a white pat on the back to make them feel good about themselves and don't realize that it's empty and shallow and hollow if it's not grounded on a truth connected to the love that you have. What are you talking about, Brother West? What has this got to do with presidential politics? It's got everything to do with it. Because if you can look at hatred and produce love, warriorship, if you can come from a people who've been traumatized for 400 years but produce wounded healers rather than just wounded hurters, wow. We can just start with Aretha Franklin, but we won't get into that right now. I'm in Omaha. We could start with Buddy Miles. All right. Playing with Jimi Hendrix. Hey, that's a tradition. People would look care for 400 years, from the first slave ship all the way to George Floyd Jr., all the way to the last person who's been shot down by the police. How you keep producing freedom fighters calling for freedom for everybody, not just your own small group and tribe and bubble. That's Fannie Lou Hamer, Martin Luther King Jr. Oh, what a great tradition. Not just the best of black people, not just the best of the American empire, the best of the human spirit in every corner of the globe. And that's why I started my campaign in the only place that I could conceive of, and that was Delta, Mississippi. Went to Lexington, is that right though, babe? Went to Brandon, went to Jackson, Mississippi. I was telling my dear sister Annette Taylor with her dear loved deceased Marsha. I don't know if she's here. Let's give it up for the Taylors. Y'all know who I'm talking about. Y'all know you know the African bookstore we're talking about here on the north side of Omaha. And I was just telling her, why did I begin in Mississippi? Because that's ground zero for the black freedom struggle. That's where the blues was created. And the blues ain't nothing but a personal catastrophe of a personal narrative of a catastrophe lyrically expressed. So America needs to know, you ain't never had no race problem. There's been catastrophes visited on black people. That's different. 1919 with Brother Will, lynched, Omaha. That wasn't a race problem. That was a catastrophe visited upon black people. That's like saying that Africa's had some kind of colonial problem. No, there's been European empires who visited catastrophe upon precious Africans. And that's true for any empire, be it British, Italian, be it French. So we begin with keeping it real. Oftentimes you talk about presidential politics, you get the little superficial discourse about little problems that we can manage and come to terms with when they don't realize that the whole sky is caving in. I start with the blues. And the blues starts with catastrophe. Ecological catastrophe, possible nuclear catastrophe, extreme wealth inequality, economic catastrophe, mediocre, mendacious politicians, political catastrophe. Look inside the souls of ourselves and our fellow citizens. You'll find a lot of spiritual catastrophe. Look at the quality of relations too often between each other, male to male to female, whatever. Not enough quality, not enough integrity, honesty, decency. That psychic catastrophe. Where are blues people? That's who produced me. I'm a blues man. And a blues people begins with catastrophe, the fundamental truth. If you reduce a catastrophe to a problem, you've already deodorized the funk. And I'm a funk master too. And a funk master means what? Keep it raw, keep it real. Say what's on your mind. Say what you mean and mean what you say. Don't pose and posture and act as if you're saying something just in order to get some kind of upward mobility or whatever it is. Say what's on your mind and then follow through with it and live and die for it. That's what I learned from Malcolm. He ain't just no isolated individual in no museum. I was glad when Sister Joanne and Sister Shamika showed me that foundation is magnificent. But you look in his eyes and I saw my mama and my daddy and my uncles and my cousins. I saw Duke Ellington. I saw Sarah Vaughan. I saw Luther Vandross. I saw Marvin Gaye. I saw Stevie Wonder. I saw George Washington Carver. These are not just figures in a pantheon. They are love warriors, freedom fighters, joy spreaders and wounded healers. What happens when that tradition spills over into presidential politics? Ooh, good God Almighty. The first thing you're going to see is you got a free person. Not in it, saying certain things with certain platitudes in order to receive certain kind of attention. No, I'm speaking the truth. If two people vote for me, fine. If I win, fine. I've already won in the sense that I'm true to myself. I'm true to a vocation. I'm true to a calling. I'm true to what I've been put here to do. It's true. You think John Coltrane gets upset and four people show up and he's blowing his heart out? He plays the same song with the same intensity because he's called to do that, and he's doing that in such a way that he's touching souls and unsettling minds and trying to get people to see things in ways they hadn't seen it before. That's his witness. That's the tradition I'm talking about. And let me tell you something. American politics ain't never come to terms with catastrophe, like my dear brother. The 400-year war against your precious people. Just because people don't talk about it don't mean it didn't happen. Just because people don't focus on it doesn't mean that your babies and your cousins has the same value as my babies and my cousins or anybody else and anywhere else in the world. Speak the truth, and you hope it'll set you free. That's one of the reasons why it's hard to get these politicians to want to talk about the catastrophe in Gaza. Oh, they don't want to say a bumbling word. As if a Palestinian baby has less value than a baby in Tel Aviv. Both of those babies, Jewish and Palestinian, have exactly the same value, significance, exactly the same moral and spiritual weight. And if we don't speak our truth, the rocks are gonna cry out. And the whole world knows that if there were a Palestinian domination and occupation of precious Jewish brothers and sisters, and nearly 7,000 precious Jewish babies had been killed in 40-some years, there'd be a qualitatively different response to that catastrophe. It's a fact. In fact, I'll say it, and I know I'm on CNN, so let me get real close. I said, the U.S. government, their policy, if there were a Palestinian genocidal assault on precious Jewish brothers and sisters, the policy of the U.S. government would be to support the Jewish version of Hamas. Because America's always supported violent overthrow when it's against their interests and tried to suppress those who bring critique to bear on it. Now, I tell you, I would be in solidarity with the Jewish babies, with the Jewish occupied, with the Jewish dominated, because with me, it ain't a question of just skin color or religious identity. It's a question of morality and spirituality. Anybody who treats anybody in this particular way needs to be radically called into question. Well, ask that to the Democratic Party. Ask that to Biden. Ask that to Congress. Can hardly say a mumbling word, and we see the whole world sees the baby parts of their bodies. That's a key sweat moment. Something just ain't right. Where's the courageous voices? Where's the candidates? Or are you so tied to the lobbies, the big money? Are you so tied to the military-industrial complex? Are you so scared and intimidated? Are you so afraid that you say it in your living room but won't say a mumbling word on television? What I love about Malcolm was he said exactly what he said in the barbershop, what he said on TV. That's courage. That's love. Even when he changed his mind. He used to say, well, white brothers and sisters are devils. And of course, I'm a Christian. I said, you know, Brother Malcolm, I think you're going too far, brother. I think that, no, the white brothers, they might behave in devilish ways too often, but they're not devils. And he would say, I'm going to get there. But I'm going to get there based on my deep love and commitment to the folk who are being demonized by the white devilish behavior, black folk. So the love was still there. But unfortunately, the tradition that I'm talking about is weaker and weaker and more feeble and more feeble in our day. And why is that so? Well, one is that we have too many black spokesmen and black leaders who no longer have the backbone, no longer have the courage. They got a brand, but not a cause. And if you have a brand, that's your market strategy. And the powers that be, the 1%, the billionaires, oh, they got a whole lot to offer. And you say, I don't believe in just name calling, because everybody's a human being. You see? So I'm going to always be empathetic no matter what. And people are going to do what they can relative to the context in which they find themselves. But I'm going to be honest with them. I'm going to be honest with myself. Because if you decide to speak the truth, you don't just speak the truth to the powers that be. You speak the truth to the people who themselves have less power. And you speak the truth to yourself. And the truth is always bigger than each and every one of us. The truth is a jagged edge. It cuts in a lot of different ways. People used to come out to me in regard to Obama, and I know my I got Sister Terry Sanders. Give it up for Sister Terry Sanders, founder of Omaha Star, legend here in North Omaha, and the daughter of Sister Simone, who we work so closely with Brother Bernie Sanders. But during the Obama years, people just come around me all the time. Brother West, you're so hard on the brother. You're so, well, I could be right, but I can be wrong. But I'm looking at the world through the vantage point of what those Sly Stone call everyday people, not Wall Street. Ordinary people, not the military, industrial complex, and Pentagon. You say, well, you're going to be unpopular. I'm not in this for popularity. I don't love black people. For black people to love me back. This ain't no quid pro quo transactional relationship. I love black people because black people are worthy of being loved. Period. Period. And that allows me to try to love everybody. But I got to love black people intensely, so I learned how to love, so when I get to my vanilla brothers and sisters, they know my love is real. We got a whole lot of black leaders love everybody but black people. Oh yeah! Which means what? Then the love ain't real. It's just a strategy. You're not willing to pay a cost. You're not willing to bear a burden. You're not willing to take a stand in the storm, in the hurricane, and still hold on to the best of the great tradition that has been bequeathed to you, transmitted to you, and it's a great tradition, it is. That's why I start with catastrophe, the blues. All right. But then the second element is swing. Now Duke Ellington say, don't mean a thing, but ain't got that swing. You got to have some sting in the swing. Now, you can ask Terrence Crawford about that. He's undefeated, isn't he? Omaha, Nebraska. Oh, yeah. 40 out of 40, is that right? He may not weigh 250 pounds, but he got some sting in his swing. But there's a deeper issue, and it has everything to do with politics. Because what Duke Ellington was saying was, black people have made dissonance itself a way of life. To live in the minor key, to live on the black notes of the piano, not because the notes are black, but because they flatten out the other notes. And they get beneath the notes and aside of the notes. Why? Because if black people didn't have swing and a different conception of time, we would be locked into a status quo that tells us there's never any alternative to you. All you can do is conform and defer to the powers that be. But when you're moving with a certain style and swinging, Stevie Wonder's Love in Need of Love is another. James Baldwin, love forces us to take off the mask we know we cannot live within, but fear we cannot live without. Love Warrior. Yeah. Ella Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer. We haven't even got to Aretha yet. Meaning what? Meaning that in a world in which it seems as if the whole planet is undergoing self-destruction on the corporate greed that views nature like an it rather than a thou in the great language of Martin Buber, our Jewish philosopher. Squeezing out everything you can get for profit. Unconcerned about the larger future. Presenting to the younger generation hardly any sense of how the very planet itself will be able to be in place long enough for them to be able to flower and flourish. What a time to live. And then the tear. Yes, I come from a folk who've been terrorized for 400 years. And in the face of terror, refuse to collectively terrorize back, but call for freedom for everybody. That's Harriet Tubman, that's Frederick Douglass. That's Ida B. Wells Barnett against the terrorism called Jim and Jane Crow. Local, global, particular, universal, in the name of solidarity for those Franz Fanon called the wretched of the earth. That's why this campaign is no ordinary campaign. Not at all. Not at all. It actually is the overflowing of the black freedom movement into electoral politics at the highest level. And the black freedom movement at its highest level are the black musicians. Yes. Musicians are the vanguard of the species. The poets are the vanguard of the species. When is the last time you had a poetic president? The last time you had a musical president? Meaning what? Simply being true to themselves enough to tell their fellow citizens the truth about itself. America, you are an empire. You have 800 military units around the world. You got 100 countries in which there's U.S. special operations. And you have a history of invading and occupying other nations in the name of quote unquote freedom. America, you are a settler colonial experiment. You own somebody else's land and you lied to yourself and said there was no people here, just buffaloes and Indians. We're here to tell you that an Indian baby, an indigenous baby, has the same value as any other baby in the world. Oh, yeah. That's one of the reasons why it's so hard for America to understand. Don't you realize a Palestinian baby, you've killed 5,000 Palestinian babies in the last 2 months, has the same value as any other baby, including a Jewish baby. All babies are precious. We will say that until we die. Until we die. Not because we so self-righteous. We want to be true to the love that was poured into us and what has been bequeathed to us by the great ones of the older generation, so that our young people can see not just language, but exemplars, concretized, fleshified, willing to live, willing to die, so they can see, lo and behold, there is an alternative. You don't have to choose between a gangster Trump pushing us towards Civil War number two, and you don't have to choose between milquetoast crypto gangster Biden
pushing us toward World War III, either with Russia mediated with Ukraine, China mediated with Taiwan, or the Middle East, this very moment spilling over into the possibility of another world war. There is an alternative. And that alternative has to do with being connected with the love warriors and the freedom fighters, but also, here I come from a black people who've been traumatized for 400 years. And at our best, we produce wounded healers, not wounded hurters. Oh, yes. Never deny the wounds and scars and bruises. But don't just reproduce the same wounds and scars and bruises in others. Give up on your hatred. Give up on your revenge. Give up on your sense of being so narcissistic and thinking that the whole world revolves around you as if only your neighborhood and your babies have value and others do not. No, wounded healers have been those who spread a joy even when they have deep sorrow. Think of Louis Armstrong. What did the great Ozzie Davis say about Louis Armstrong? When I met Brother Louis, was that the police? I just pray nobody's hurting and I know they need a healing. What Brother Ozzie say, when I met Brother Louis, he was the saddest man I ever met. Every picture you see of Louis, what do you see? He's like the Baal Shem Tov in the Hasidic tradition of our Jewish brothers and sisters, just overflowing with love, overflowing with compassion. That's Louis Armstrong. And every community, every tradition has those kinds of folk just overflowing. I look in the eyes of my Palestinian brothers and sisters on TV in the midst of a genocidal assault, and what do you still see? Dignity, determination, not allowing this catastrophe to have the last word. What is it about the human spirit at its best? Because the human spirit at its worst, organized hatred, institutionalized greed, routinized indifference to the suffering of the vulnerable. Yes, presidential politics can be different, very different, even maybe qualitatively different if in the midst of our blue situation for the planet, for the American democracy nearly crushed to the ground as neo-fascism escalates, given that blue situation, we can still learn something from a blues people. And what is the blues about? Catastrophe. Nobody loves me but my mama, and she might be driving too. That's B.B. King. He's the king of the blues. Strange fruit the southern trees bear. That's Billie Holiday. Catastrophe. American terrorism. The blues is also about what? It's about compassion. It's about courage. And when it comes to politics, you have to have those who aspire to office, who's willing to go so radically against the grain that it shakes up the whole empire such that people begin to see things more clearly and feel things more deeply and begin to act more courageously and compassionately and, most importantly, in solidarity. In solidarity. And so I won't go on and on, but you can see that in so many ways the campaign is humanity and creativity and freedom to choose. If we cannot come to terms with the transphobias and homophobias, losing sight of the humanities of our Muslims and our Arabs and our Jewish brothers and sisters and black folk and indigenous folk, if we cannot attempt to try to overcome the divide and conquer strategy that the ruling classes historically have always deployed, makes it difficult for our workers to come together so that we don't have strong militant wings of our trade union movement. We have to have strong labor with living wages for workers across the board. Oh, yes. And how do we keep that legacy alive? We just have to do it. You can't just talk about it. We're at the point now where language itself is so radically inadequate. They say Biden wrote an op-ed page, an op-ed opinion piece today, talking about how deeply he's concerned about the civilians in Gaza and genocide taking place. I said, brother, get off the crack pipe. Get off the crack pipe. We were born at night, but not last night. Who do you take us for? Same would be true in terms of climate catastrophe. I've got the grandest green project that's going to allow for greenhouse emissions and fracking and on. Please, Brother Biden, get off the crack pipe. I'm the strongest pro-union leader because I spent 93 seconds giving a brief speech, and I'm the first U.S. president to ever be on a picket line. That says something about presidents being extensions of the ruling class in the history of the empire. The bar is so low, all you got to do is show up for a minute and a half, and lo and behold, you on the cutting edge of fighting for class struggle. Please, get off the crack pipe. And I don't say this out of hatred. I pray for the brother. Y'all know I'm a Christian now, which means I need a lot of prayer. I've been praying to abolish poverty for the last 55 years, and you see how effective that prayer is. We got to get out and do something. And that's why I'm so very glad that you all have decided to become part of this. And this is just the start, because we're going all the way to the end. And I'm telling you now, given just how fragile things are, I'm not convinced that Biden is even going to be a candidate. He might run out of gas and do an LBJ.
I've decided not to run. I've reached a conclusion that my cognitive skills are not what they used to be. I say, brother, that's true for all of us. Join the club, join the club, join the club. But it's not your cognitive skills only that we're concerned about. It's your policies, it's your lack of vision. It's your tie to the war machine, it's your tie to Wall Street, it's your tie to Silicon Valley, and it's your refusal to actually embrace the needs of poor and working people. That's why you are rejected. That's why you are rejected. The same is true with Brother Trump. Brother Trump's gangster for 55 years and more. And may end up in jail. Who knows? RFK Jr.
Oh, God.
Who knows? Brother RFK Jr., we love you, but you can't support genocide and say you on the cutting edge of progressive politics, brother. And that's just a start. We shall see. You don't know, but the important thing is that in the end, we want to be true to the best of ourselves, want to be true to the callings that have been bequeathed to us. And it's manifest in a variety of different ways. I take very seriously the anthem of black people, which is lift every voice. That's right. It's not lift every echo. It's not an expression of a silo. You got to find who you are. Your voice is like your fingerprint. It's distinctively yours. And when you raise your voice, you don't have to imitate and copy anybody else. You are an original. Even folk that have deep disagreements with me, if you're being true to yourself, I can still respect you. You're just wrong. But I'm a libertarian. I believe in free speech. I fight for people's right to be wrong. Everybody doesn't have to follow me. I'm not a Pied Piper. Not at all. Look at all of the censorship and canceling now of our precious students trying to raise up the banner for fighting against genocide on college campuses. It was just a few months ago, people talking about, oh, you know, we've got to be so thoroughly robust in our defense of free speech and make sure cancel culture is something that's pushed to the margin. And as soon as it shifts and reversed, here comes the cancellation. Here comes the censorship. Here comes the undercutting of free speech. How hypocritical can you get? The double standards are overwhelming. And you simply call it for what it is. Call it for what it is. And in the end, the crucial thing is that with the younger generation, with the sparkle in their eye, with a sense of going beyond, there is no alternative. When they look at us and they say, in November, a little secret, we had a magnificent group of folks of all walks of life that came together to throw down and have a good time with some funk and some groove. But most importantly, they stood up for integrity, honesty, decency, and a vision in which working and poor people could be at the center, tied to a campaign that was trying to turn the empire upside down, dismantle the empire, democratize the economy, and stay in contact with the humanity of everybody. That's what we're here for. Thank you so very much.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
tuned to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kbu.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of An Oregon Story, saving our beaches, farmland, and more. Screening from January 17th through January 31st across multiple venues in Portland and beyond. This film documents the history of Oregon's efforts to protect its coastline and save its farmland from urban sprawl. The documentary features archival footage and interviews with the individuals who helped create Oregon's land use planning program and defended it for the past 50 years. Again, that's a documentary film screening of An Oregon Story, saving our beaches, farmland, and more. From January 17th through January 31st across multiple venues in Portland and beyond.